Tina, would you please call the roll?
Chairman Christensen?
Present.
Commissioner Demarest?
Here.
Commissioner Dirksen?
Here.
Commissioner Jensen?
Here.
Commissioner Rodman?
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood?
Here.
Commissioner Tuttle?
Here.
Thank you, Dan. Right now is when we reserve time for comments from the citizens. This is a comment period for anything that's not on tonight's agenda. And the only agenda items we have tonight are public hearings. So if you have any comments other than on those public hearings, you can speak to anybody. Anybody have anything? Okay. Next item on the agenda is approval of minutes. And I didn't see any minutes. So, Paul?
We have no minutes for tonight, as it turns out, but all of the minutes will need to be dated for your next meeting.
December 2nd?
Okay. Absolutely.
All right. Sounds good. Okay, then the next item on the agenda tonight is the first public hearing. And Paul, do you want to go by the way they're on this agenda? Or do you have a preference as to which way you want to go on these? Or I think, go ahead.
There's maybe a few more people here for schools, but I guess we could accommodate those folks.
Okay.
Since there's a few more.
All right, so let's go over.
Yeah, waiting for anything.
Okay, let's we'll do the comprehensive plan, which is the B item, comprehensive plan amendment CPA 2013-D, and zoning code amendment ZCA 2012-09 school mitigation fees. Paul, I'll let you do your overview.
Okay.
Before you open the door.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had quite a bit of discussion on this. This goes back to last year when the commission did send a recommendation after several workshops to the council to make changes to the comp plan facilities element and the zoning code amendment, the municipal code amendment. It was a recommendation to changed the 50% discount, but the council did not take any action and decided to wait to bring it back this fall with these other amendments. So what, as a reminder, what the next steps are, tonight obviously we're having a public hearing, and on December 2nd would be our final look and recommendation from commission to council. And that would be to amend the capital facilities element, amend the municipal code chapter, and as a part of that process, also adopt the long-range plans for Snohomish and Monroe School District, which is, of course, what establishes the impact fees. Mm-hmm. What we're looking at is, I should say, what this really comes down to with all these changes, the capital facilities elements are really mostly about removing regulatory language from that document and revising and cleaning up the municipal code section. But the part that has generated the most discussion is this, whether to retain the 25% discount rate established by council many, many years ago, or change to a 50% discount. And the numbers in yellow give you an idea of what the differences would be with the what's in force right now is this number for a single family, 3767. when we adopt the new 2012-17 school district plans, with that comes these impact fees, which would be the $29.76 for a single family or $19.84 as a 50% discount. And the same for duplex and multifamily, 25%, 50%. Snohomish is a little bit different. Their only current fee is for single family homes, and that again is the 25% versus 50% discount. Those are the basic numbers that we're talking about in terms of this discount rate. And I believe that may be all I have on that subject.
Okay, thank you, Paul. I have a question on that. The difference between Monroe and Snohomish, why there's such a disparity between those rates?
Well, the impact fees were fairly high in 2008, but since then they had issued a pretty significant bond issue, which basically took the place of impact fees. So they were able to lower their impact fees because they were generating revenue through their bond issue.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. That's with that, then I'd like to open the public hearing for the school mitigation fees for the City of Monroe, CPA 2013-B and BCA 2012-09. First part of the public hearing is the public testimony, and I do have some people signed up here, and forgive me if I mispronounce anybody's name, I don't mean to. The first name I have here is Nancy Pierce. Please give your name and address for the record, please.
Thank you, Nancy Pruitt-Pierce, 12003 Woods Creek Road, Monroe, 98272. I'm on the school board. I have one handout that I'd like to pass around. So I was here last month also. Good to see you all again. Thanks for leaving this up because I want to point out a couple of things on this chart that are important. There was a significant drop in Snohomish. They passed a $500 million bond. That's how they built Glacier Peak High School. They remodeled several of their facilities, including Snohomish High School. The people in Snohomish are now paying taxes on that bond. So, yes, mitigation fees have come down in Snohomish because they have new and modern facilities and capacity. They can absorb a lot more kids from growth than we can here in Monroe, because we're, as I said before, we're quite far behind in both the modernization of our facilities, the state of our facilities, and in capacity. Two other things when I came here last time that you guys had some concerns about from your comments. One was what's going on with the county. The county is charging different discounts than we are here. I did set up an appointment, as you suggested, it was a good idea to meet with Dave Summers. He and Jim and I sat down together. And one of the things he said is that even though they don't discount in the city, all of their fees have a lot of credit built in. So they don't discount the same way we do here, but there's other reasons that they can get those fees down for their folks. And so I don't think it's an apples to apples comparison. The other thing he said that from his perspective in Snohomish County, we're the fastest growing area in Monroe, so he doesn't see the fees as being a deterrent for growth. He seemed to think that we were doing pretty well with attracting development and growth here in the area. So just to hit on top of that, what I want you to pay attention to on this handout is this is the fees that Monroe charges for everything when you're building. So notice the top part of that, and I circled the number, that $1,477 is the basic capital for the city of Monroe. And then below there, you also add in school impact fees, park impact fees, and transportation fees. It often adds up to between $20,000 and $23,000 per single family unit. So that's all of the fees together, which is part of why I said last time, I think we need to look at all the fees in one place and then think about it. The The other thing to notice on here is how much it's already dropping. It's going from 37.67 to 29.76, and then if you discount further, it goes to 19.84. These zeros, by the way, there's two different ways to see multifamily. One is with one bedroom, and usually that's zero because you're not assuming you're going to have kids in a single, in an apartment that has one bedroom. And then their fees are different if you have multi, more than one bedroom. So pay attention to that. I don't know how that shows up all of them. One of the things I'm concerned about in this, in all these actions, is that you also want the city to be able to set the fees going forward. And one of the things I've asked you is, how will that work? Who will set the fee? Because we don't set the fee, the county sets the fee. The county has some black box formula that they use that determines what the fees ought to be. That's why those fees are different. That comes from the county, not from Snohomish or Monroe. And the county does that because they already take into account all the different things that we're trying to take into account here. That's built into their formulas. That's why the formula changes over time. So, for instance, our fees have gone up on multifamily and gone down on single family because our generation rate says we're getting more from multifamily units. So it's already in there before you discount. And then two other reminders. So one of the big things to remember is that we're behind the curve on our facilities. We need schools. We're already in trouble on our schools. It's one of the places we're in trouble. We don't have very many other sources for capital. If we don't get mitigation fees to even adjust for the growth, we have to take it out of operations, and we are underfunded for operations as it is. So taking operations money to build capital won't work. But if we end up doing that, we have to cut something out for kids, and we don't want to have to do that. We need at least 9 months to adjust, so we need certainty. If we don't know what the fees are going to be 9 months from now, but we know we're going to end up with 153 more kids, we don't have time to build the portables that we need to put those kids in. So that's one thing to keep in mind. Then the last reminder, Ralph mentioned this last time, at 75%, that 29.76, we put it through our formulas, it'll cost us about $750,000 to accommodate the kids in the pipeline you've got now, 250 houses. And with that 29.76, we are collecting $744,000. So we're only off by like $6,000. But if you drop it, we're off by $250,000. Any questions? Can I have questions?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Commissioners, any questions for Nancy? Commissioner Tuttle?
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy, for coming. I've been doing a lot of research on impact fees and the history of the impact fees and why they're there and how they started. And one of the things that hasn't been asked that I need to know is what proportion of the capital facilities budget are the impact fees? Because Ralph said there are three different sources for the impact fees.
Well, so the numbers that come up, it depends on what you have to build. So when you do your capital, the impact fees adjust. They can only be used for capacity.
No, but I mean, if you have a number, line item for capital facilities, how much of that number is reliant on the impact fees? Are the impact fees 90%? Are they 20%?
Okay, if I answer a question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I'll be talking next, I think.
Do you step up to the podium?
Sure.
Please.
Okay. Repeat my name.
Yes, please.
Ken Hoover, Superintendent. I think I'm scheduled to speak perhaps next. If you look at our capital budget for this year, virtually 100% of it is from mitigation fees because that's the only revenue source we've got. Another source of funding could be in the future, if we pass a bond or a capital levy, those funds would go into that budget. And then in those times, mitigation fees might be a much smaller percentage. If you're looking at individual capital projects, for example, when we built Freilands, I think that was a $13 to $15 million project, of which about $1 million was from mitigation fees. So it varies from
the
point of
time. Right, but you're basically saying right now the entirety of the capital facilities budget is mitigation fees?
Right. We have about $600,000 in our capital budget. It's almost all mitigation fees.
But that does change depending on what you're building. mitigation piece.
But it's still significant, whether or not it's 100% or 90%, it's most of the budget.
At right now, because we've already finished building Frylands. So I think of the mitigation fees as adjusting for growth, which is what they're intended for, right? I mean, we get, if you build houses, we will get kids in the schools. If we get kids in the schools, we need capacity for those kids. And that's really what it does. And it's mostly I think we use it. If I really look at the history, we use it for building portables. And then we build schools, because schools take several years. You can't do it quickly. You can't do it quickly enough for the kids when they get into town.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't think we have any other questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next one is Ken Hoover.
I have a hand up. So, commissioners, thank you for allowing me to speak. Again, my name is Ken Hoover, and I'm the superintendent. I brought some pictures because we all know the story that the picture's worth 1,000 words, and I have 6 or 7 pictures, so it's worth 6 or 7,000 words, and great for an opportunity like this. One of the things that's been mentioned by Nancy and Jim Scott and others who've spoken on this is that we're kind of behind the curve. And part of the answer to the question of why do you see a big change in homelessness mitigation fees from one time to another is that the system the state set for mitigation fees, which the county is following along, is needs-based. So when you have needs and you're a growing district, well, for example, if we were not growing at all, we would have no need for any mitigation fees. If we grow or projected to grow, then we have a need for mitigation fees. So back to the part of the story about Sonomish, they've got, you know, had several bonds that were successful that had a change on their mitigation fees and what they charged because of the way the system works. So I'm going to show you some pictures here. The first picture is at Park Place Middle School, and I think we all know, those of you who've been in community Long Island, it was built about 1976, so it's almost 40 years old. And this is just off of Google Maps, so it's a very simple snapshot. I know you're all familiar with the facility itself. You can see the library building in the kind of bottom right-hand corner of the complex. That's the F building, and that's the newest building. On the southern edge of the campus, you'll see a bunch of portables. And so you can see portables on this side. You will also notice like a grass field and no track. This is kind of give you a context for what you're about to see in a couple more slides. If you turn to the next page, you see Hidden River, and you'll notice that there's one main complex that's the original building with one expansion. And then on the left-hand side of the parking lot, you will notice there's 3 large portable buildings that are combination buildings, so there's 5 classrooms there. Again, no football field, no soccer field, or track. And Hidden River, as we know, is a newer building, but it's certainly, we would like to have been able to add to a permanent space, but we weren't able to do so because of the inability to pass a bond to do that. If you go to the next page, you're going to see Canyon Park Junior High in Bothell. This is one of the North Shore schools. It's actually located in Snohomish County, so I chose it. You can see here a satellite picture. You'll notice the complex, much larger complex, synthetic track, artificial turf, baseball fields are under construction, but that's because of the fact that Google's got a bit of a lag. They're completed at this point. I want you to notice there's no portables on site. There's a couple of small buildings on the very south end of that picture. Those are greenhouses and not portables. If you turn to the next page, you'll see Cavalero Mid-High School, which is in Lake Stevens School District. That's been constructed within the last few years. You'll notice, again, no portables, synthetic track, artificial turf, lots of amenities. Let's move on. Next page is Centennial Middle School in Snohomish. Just recently was constructed new, part of that bond program. The part that shows the field that looks like it's under construction. That's completed at this point in time, both the ball field and the track. Again, you know, nice new complex. And then finally, Valley View Middle School, again, another Google Earth or Google Maps picture. You can see the new complex, and of course, it's under construction here. If you want to see what it looks like, because it's actually completed, turn to the next page, you'll see the original plans, which include this embedded baseball field. We're talking about middle schools. Our high school does not have these amenities, and these are what middle schools have. And the purpose tonight isn't to, you know, let you know that, you know, our facilities are way behind, but the truth of the matter, the combination of them being way behind and us having to use portables to house all the students is what we're really talking about. The mitigation fees are a really important aspect of how we're able to keep up. All the money goes essentially from mitigation fees to cover us putting portables on site, and at some point, you know, we would like to be able to move the students that are being served in 36 portables today into permanent construction that's obviously more appropriately designed for learning. So, picture's worth a thousand words. I hope you get a lot out of that. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
How far behind are we currently?
In terms of upgrading or in terms of space?
Our number of students that you don't have enough room for.
Well, we have 36 portables that are being used as learning spaces today. And one way to think about that is, you know, roughly 25 students in every one of those classrooms would represent about 900 students. Now, some of those are at the high school, and they actually touch a lot more students than that, because if they're seeing students five periods a day, there's actually 125 students who spend part of their day in a classroom that's a portable. So we would, if we add up all those numbers, it'd be much larger impact. So we're behind in terms of space to serve kids, and we're also behind in terms of just, you know, amenities to appropriately serve the kids that we have. An example of that is the high school was built new in 1999. We're still working to figure out a way to fund the baseball fields on that site so that they can be used by the students instead of kids having to go down to Marshall Field and some other places to have games. And of course, we all know, if you look at some of these pictures, if the middle schools look like this, what do the high schools look like in these other school districts? And that's what our kids see when they get on a bus and go play games. They see facilities that are much more appropriately prepared for students than what we have.
So are you saying we're already behind 900 students? We need space, permanent space for 900 students. Is that what you said?
That would be ideal, would be to have permanent space for 900 students. That's the equivalent of another school.
And besides the number of students, all the other amenities that you're talking about, what kind of dollar amount does that look like?
Well, it's fairly substantial. The cost of building school construction today, the going rate is $300 a square foot. I know that's a shocking number, but that's the cost of it. And so we calculate that essentially in terms of permanent space for every student that rents us, about $55,000. So that's expensive. For example, a new high school being built, proposed in the North Shore School District, and they're asking, I think, for $275 million, but they're looking at $130 million to build a new high school.
So are we looking at about $130
million? No. We would never build high schools that that price range in current context, because we would have to pare back what we would ask substantially. So we're not looking at replacing our high school. Obviously, our high school is a great high school, but it does lack some of the amenities that other high schools have.
So a general dollar amount to get up to the amenities that we think bring us up to par?
Well, I would say well over $100 million.
Thank you.
How much do you say you have 37 portables?
Well, we have 41 portables, of which 36 are being used for learning spaces.
Okay. And how much does it cost to put a portable in?
Well, it varies depending on whether you're wanting water connected to it. If you have bathrooms, then you substantially go up in the cost. a traditional classroom is probably somewhere between a double portable, which is two classrooms, is somewhere between $160,000 and $250,000. It goes up from there if you want to have some specialty spaces like science labs. Obviously, they tend to be larger and also have some much more specialized equipment they put into them.
I have a question. It seems to me it's like a catch-22, because you're spending your money on portables, which now you can't use that money to build buildings. So how do you propose going down the road that you have some way of catching up? Is this the only way is a bond measure? Is that
probably the realistic way of getting kind of out of this cycle is to pass a bond measure. Obviously, gauging what the community will support is a little tricky, but assuming that you could do that, bond measures take a 60% yes vote to pass, so that makes them harder to pass than a traditional levy. And so a bond would allow you to build permanent spaces. If you're not also growing at that same time, then you maybe what happens is you deal with growth. Oftentimes, that's what school districts do. They build, say, for example, a new elementary school to handle the growth. They still end up keeping all the portables they've got. Because they're growing so fast, they can't really kind of get ahead of the curve.
Okay. To see the way I'm looking at this, and it's just again in my simple engineering mode that I've grown up in, is that you don't ever seem to be, even with the mitigation fees you're getting today, that's 25% discount. You're not going to ever be able to get enough money to build a building with it. The only thing you can do with that is try and keep up with portables with that money. That's
the current situation we find ourselves in. We are currently studying and asking community members to join us to study our capital facility needs, and I think the board is considering, you know, coming to the community in the future and asking for a bond or a capital projects levy in order to try to meet its capital needs more appropriately. And again, if we were to pass something like that, then we begin to look a little more like Snohomish than we do, like we currently do, and that means we would see mitigation fees go down because our needs would be getting met.
Okay. All right, that's our question I have. Anybody else? Mr. Demarest?
Thank you. Ken, I don't know that you'll be able to answer this or not, but the commission is being told that the discount and the way the discount is applied needs to be moved out of the comprehensive plan. Out of our comprehensive plan. Does the school district have an opinion on that?
Well, I think Director Nancy Truitt-Pierce mentioned that one of the things that we really need to figure things out is to have some sort of predictability about how much we're going to be able to collect, which is why the current, you know, capital facility plan managed through the county basically gives us that opportunity to know for 2 years is what the rate's going to stay. And so kind of being able to then anticipate mitigation fees and stuff, we would be able to order a portable or a double portable and get it installed, hopefully before the kids show up. And when things are growing rapidly, that gets harder and harder for us to know.
Given that we're apparently being told that the city can't encumber future councils by obligating the council perhaps to a two-year window on mitigation fees, discount rate. Would you see any way, other way of that being resolved, that question of certainty?
Yeah. I really have a good answer for that because I think the thing is.
Answer that one, yeah. If they don't mind if I join you.
Are you signed up, sir?
No, because the list was down, but I want you.
Okay. I don't have a problem. But please come up and give your name and address for the record.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
My name's Jim Scott. I live at 20227 80th Avenue Southeast, Snohomish. I am also on the school board. I currently am the vice president. I have a unique experience with the Growth Management Act as I was a planning commissioner first and then a city councilman for the city of Clyde Hill. When the act was adopted, negotiated and implemented. For what Commissioner Myers just said, you're getting bad legal information. Everything that is passed by a community binds the next council until that council decides to change it. So you have no problems in doing what you believe is right.
Perhaps, if I may, I should check and clarify my question. As I understood from staff, what we're being told is that if we were to try to incorporate something that says that once the fee or the discount is adopted and codified, the council cannot change it again in the next 2 years until the school district comes back to us with another capital facilities plan. And that's what I meant by binding the council.
Well, that is currently the way the law works. That is what has been done historically because it has been part of your capital facilities plans. That is what was intended from the Growth Management Act. By doing that, you take the politics out of it. By removing that barrier, that two-year commitment, it becomes a total political football. It can be changed at the whim of the council. And that takes away our ability to plan. Because, as has been said, we need time. You know, the question on how come we never catch up, well, it's pretty easy to understand. Our mitigation fees are $28,000 or $2,800 per unit, and the cost to house a student is $55,000. We're never going to catch up on mitigation fees alone. We have to have a bond issue, and those of you that have lived in this community for any length of time know that the school district has long had great difficulty in getting the community to pass bond issues. That's why we're behind. You know, any of you who have lived here for more than 10 years experienced the problems in the schools in the 90s and the early 2000s with overcrowding, with changing grade levels for each school, grade bands at each school, multiple times. That's not good for educating kids. But we had no choice because we didn't have the money to build the facilities that we needed. The mitigation fees weren't covering it. All through the 90s, I believe your mitigation fees were 50% discounted. And it was after 2000 that a previous council changed them to 25%. Well, that 25% has been binding on subsequent councils ever since. So the concept that you can't do that is absolutely ridiculous. They're not being fair with you. They're giving you bad information. You can, in fact, do that. And that's the way every level of government works. Whoever's currently in power sets the laws. Those laws remain in place until some future council changes the law. But I had some a prepared statement for you, and actually I've got copies of a bunch of things, but not enough. I didn't know there was 8 of you. My planning commission only had 5, so I have 5 copies. So if you don't mind sharing them. Okay, first is my comments for tonight, which I'm going to buzz through rather than reading them all together. But there is also the letter from the school board president a year ago, my comments to the planning commission a year ago, and my comments to the council a year ago. So that will give you some background on where I stand. Tonight, what I want to speak to you about is not from the position of being a councilman or a school board member. It's from being a private citizen who has experience doing exactly what you guys are doing. I helped write the comprehensive plan for Clyde Hill, and then as a council member, I helped implement it. And while Clyde Hill is a much larger, or smaller community, I was the representative for the city to both Suburban Cities Association and Puget Sound Regional Council the whole time I was on the council. And all we did in the early 90s was talk about growth management. The whole intent of growth management was the people had spoken. They were tired of endless growth and them having to foot the bill. The intent of the Growth Management Act was to have the developers pay a fair portion of the cost that growth brings. That's true for your roads, that's true for your parks, and that's true for our schools. Unfortunately, we're not a planning and developing authority, so we have no idea when permits are issued, and we have no authority to collect the fees. We can only collect mitigation fees through an interlocal agreement with the local planning and development authority. Now, fairness has been brought up a lot in this entire discussion. And the fairness that the supporters of the change in discount say is, how is it fair that on one side of the road you've got the county with a 50% discount and much lower fees, and on this side of the road you've got Monroe with much higher fees? Well, my question to you is, how is it fair that you discount school fees at all when you don't discount your own? You know, we're left out. We don't have the authority to set the fees or collect the fees. You do that for us. But as a community, why are you demanding that the county eliminate their discount fees? It would sure as hell help our schools. It would sure as hell help this community. That's what would be fair. You guys, you know, several discussions a year ago about, well, do we look at all the fees or do we just look at the school fees? Well, of course you want to look at the school fees. That's the only one that doesn't hurt you. But it sure as hell hurts the community, and it hurts the education of the children within the community. Because if we have another growth spurt like the one that lasted 40 years until 2008, that caused significant overcrowding in our schools. It caused significant disruption of the learning day. We don't want to see that again. You know, why people choose a community, in almost every study you'll find, is the quality of the schools. Quality schools increase property values. They increase pride in the community. They increase your tax base. Schools that are overcrowded and underfunded have the opposite effect. Yes, Snohomish has lower impact fees than Monroe does. There's a reason for that, as has been explained. It's primarily due to capacity. Having a $500 million worth of bonds to rebuild almost all of their schools in the last 8 years has left them with capacity for growth. This district's been behind forever. As I look back in the records, I mean, this was a problem back in the 70s in this community. And that's why we have actually 38 portables. I think Ken is forgetting about the two at Frank Wagner Elementary that were older portables that we refurbished over the summer so they could, in fact, house kids again. So we probably have, you know, closer to 1,000 kids in portables today. But my thing is fairness. You know, how is it fair that you choose to harm the schools to please the developers? I just don't get it. And all of the push for changing the discount rate comes from the building community. They don't care what our schools are like. They're not going to live here, but the people that are going to live here will be sending 0.6 kids for every single family home and 0.67 kids for every multifamily two-bedroom unit. And without having adequate funding to house those kids and the time, the advanced time needed to prepare for those kids coming to us, we're going to end up right back where we were in the 90s, with overcrowding, shifting boundaries, shifting grade levels, all those things that have such a detrimental effect on our schools and our children. Let's not go there. I really believe that this community should be after the county to eliminate their discount rate, because that would help improve our schools, that would help get us back on a more even track, and that would attract far more people to this community than a $1,000 discount on the developer's fees is ever going to attract. So, thank you for your time. Any questions, I'd be happy to answer. Obviously, I have
an opinion. I just have one comment, if you don't mind. I think you'd make a great commercial if you were trying to sell a levy.
I will be trying to sell a levy.
I think that's where you need to bring that passion.
We obviously do. But the levy takes a long time to actually house kids. It's 3 or 4 years down the road before you have planned the school, gotten the permits, built the project, and the kids can come in.
What I'm trying to say is that's where you need to bring that
back. Oh, we sure are going to do that. But it's just as important on the mitigation end, because the mitigation end is what gives us the ability to house the kids when they show up. If you change the collection point to occupancy, we lose that ability. Mm-hmm. If you reduce our fees by increasing the discount rate, it makes it that much harder for us to do. Let's not go there. This is a great community. There's been, you know, a huge upswell in this community in support of the schools in the last few years. We need to build on that, not slap it in the face. So, again, thank you for your time. I'll answer any questions on anything you want.
Research anything? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mike, just on the issue of burdening Fisher College, we did get some legal interpretations, and I think last being the subject of a supermajority vote by council to change the whatever is adopted came up, and I guess it could also apply potentially to something like preventing impact fees assessed that are being assessed changing from one school facilities plan to another. And yes, it is correct that if we do such a thing now and a council adopts a regulation, then a future council can take action to undo any ordinance. And there may be other situations that where there is, in fact, some sort of burden, but in this case, for these kinds of things on this matter, it's something that can be adopted if council wishes to do so. And the next council, if they wish to do so, can void.
Clarification. As long as the mitigation... Not talking loud enough, huh? So as long as the mitigation fees remain part of your growth management planning, they can only be addressed once a year, and preferably only once every other year when the school provides you new capacity data. But what the intent is to take them out of the Growth Management Act planning so that you can change them at will. And while they say, well, we'll only do it once a year, they have the ability to change it every time they need. That doesn't help anybody. You know, Growth Management Act was for long-term planning for growth, not putting people in a situation of having to react to the growth. Thank you.
Okay. Next name I have here is Katie Wood.
Hi, my name is Katie Woods. My address is 17621 158th Place Southeast. I am also on the school board, but I also am here speaking as a parent and a resident of the city. So I will be brief, because what I have to say, a lot of it has already been said, so I'm not going to continue to repeat myself. But it's very important that we do not change the mitigation fees because with my children in the district, being in the schools, you can see the impact that our facilities do need some work. And it is about the state of our facilities. And with more growth, we want growth, because as a business leader in the town, we do want more growth so that we have more customers that build our businesses. But with that growth comes more students, and we need more capacity for our schools. A decision about the need for mitigation fees should be related to the life cycle of our school facilities. It shouldn't be about what other people charge. It needs to be about what we need to provide for our students here in our town. I've been a resident here for 16 years, and so to see the change that we've gone through in those 16 years, there's been a lot of growth. And then there's been some dips, but we're back on the growth pattern. So we need to be planning for that. And it's not optional to provide schools. The day the kids walk in school bus, they need to know that they are in a safe place. And having those fees decreased in any way will have an impact on the families that do move there. And there's also other ways. You know, you are looking at one aspect, but we were just asking that you look at all aspects, all the fees that the city charges. Have an equal look at all of them and see, is it really that you just need to change the mitigation fees? The parks, I use the parks in town. The parks are way ahead of the schools. Maybe look at the parks fees and so forth. Just really think about the kids that are in the school and the community members, because if we do change the mitigation fees, it is going to be the taxpayers that pay for it later. May not be right now, but it will go back on the taxpayers later when we do have the capacity growth. So, good. Thank you.
Yeah, commissioners, any questions for Katie? Okay, thank you, Katie.
Thank you.
Okay, one more name on here is Aaron Angus?
Angus Snapka.
Snapka, okay. Thank you.
It's a little difficult to follow Jim. It's a bit like, I guess, being behind Mother Teresa on Judgment Day. So I'm just a regular citizen. I have two little boys that are two and will eventually be going to the Monroe schools.
Aaron, can I?
Oh, yes. 421 South Lewis Street, right around Frankway there.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Also on the Capital Facilities Steering Committee, and it's been pretty sobering to go around to the various schools in the district and to see, well, this one needs a roof, this one needs a septic system, these kids are going to school in trailers, and, you know, Park Place Middle School, you know, from some angles kind of looks like something out of the former Soviet Union. I really think that reducing the mitigation fees is not a very good idea. You know, if mitigation fees can at least pay for the trailers, portables, I'm sorry, then, you know, at least the kids don't lose out in terms of programming, and hopefully the bond will pass and pay for some of these larger issues. I really think that if you all took the time to tour the various facilities, you would come to the conclusion that taking money away from the schools is a really bad idea.
Commissioners, any questions for Aaron? Okay, thank you, Aaron. I have no more sign-ups here, but is there anybody else that would like to come up and comment on school mitigation fees? Okay, since
I have a little tidbit of information that was asked earlier.
Please come up.
Ms. Tuttle asked about our backlog. And what I can tell you is that in the 2010 planning process, the internal capital facilities study, they came up, and this was community-based, they came up with almost $200 million in short-term needs. That committee, recognizing the difficulty the school district has had in passing bonds, cut it to just under $100 million in their recommendation to the school board. The school board then cut that to about $47 million, which would have remodeled Park Place Middle School. It would have put permanent structure at Hidden River in place of the portables that we had to do instead. And it would have provided some of the funds necessary for the baseball fields of the high school. And that measure, even though it had been cut to 25% of the recognized need, failed. So that should give you, and that's just the backlog of current projects that we need to be doing. That didn't include any new construction for new capacity. That was just to do what is already here. The kids in the portables, that's a whole middle school. Excuse me, that's a whole elementary school and half a middle school. If we could spread it out, but unfortunately kids don't come in even numbers. They end up where they are, when they are, and not where the capacity exists or whatever. But so that should give you a better idea of the background of, you know, how far behind this district is with its finances for capital construction. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Okay. Any other comments? If there's no other comments, I'm going to call for a motion to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing.
I'll make a motion to close public testimony.
Motion made by Commissioner Demarest to close the public testimony. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Demarest, Dirksen. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. All right, commissioners, now is our time to discuss. Commissioner Demarest.
Thank you. We're being told, and the citizens of Monroe are being told that, and I quote, the adventure starts here. We're being told that the city should be promoting tourism and the economic development associated with tourism. I think there's a major shortcoming in that motto. That in my mind, the adventure is that of the citizens that live here, that raise their kids here, and that includes the kids that go to school here. That's where the adventure really needs to be focused on. I've heard both sides of this argument this year. I heard it last year. One of the key things that stands out in my mind is that whole issue of certainty. The school district is absolutely right. We control all the other mitigation fees here at City Hall. The school district, who is the one that lives with mitigation fees and the consequences of not getting them, doesn't have any control over that. I think that's unfair, as has been pointed out tonight. If we can't create an ordinance that provides certainty in our zoning code. For many years, we've had a comprehensive plan element that has worked. It's never been challenged as far as structure goes and the approach is taken. I would like to see us leave what we have alone, both as to structure and as to discount. Carry on with what we've done. It's not perfect. It's better than what's being proposed. And most of all, it does two things. One, it continues to maintain at least a reasonable level of certainty and maintains that discount rate where it's been. Thank you.
Commissioner Jensen?
First, I just wanted to start by just thanking those that have come and talked to us tonight. And I wanted to make sure that the understanding out there is that whatever comes of this commission, the council can still do whatever they want. So all the information you've given to us, feel free to take to the council as well. I think I would be kind of in agreement with what you just said about, I don't know why we'd then be making all these changes. I guess we can't leave it alone. We probably would have to update numbers for 2012. right? Has it currently got 2012 numbers in the original, or is it 2010 numbers?
Right now, we are using 2010 numbers to assess impact fees.
So if we wanted to leave it alone, we would still need to update it for 2012 numbers. I would not have a problem because in the terms of fairness, I know our last meeting, a question was about, well, is it, and I think someone mentioned it, is it fair that someone across the line only has to pay half as much or half the fee, where inside the city they pay three quarters of the fee? I would flip that on its head and say, is it fair that they get to pay less? Instead of asking, is it fair that people in Monroe pay more? No, I say, is it fair that the ones outside of Monroe pay less? Either way you look at it, there's always an element of unfairness. And trying to make a whole bunch of changes based on this fairness versus that fairness doesn't seem to me to justify changing a whole bunch of things that don't need to be changed. Someone's still going to find some piece unfair.
So that's it. Thank you. Commissioners, anything else? Any other discussion? Commissioner Jerson?
Paul, now the Growth Management Act, is that already a part of our comprehensive plan, or is that totally separate? Is that what we're trying to do, is we're trying to move that growth management plan back out of the comprehensive plan, or is that going to continue to be part of it?
Well, the Growth Management Act basically sets the direction for comprehensive plan.
Okay.
Based on 13 goals and other requirements, and the existing capital facilities element of our comp plan does have language now related to the impact fees, quite a bit of information on the impact fees, a lot of which was proposed to be removed as it's more a regulatory nature, more regulation nature. The comp plan is all about policy, and you know, certainly there could be the comp plan is not a place for regulation. You cannot enforce regulations by way of the comp plan. You can set policy and set pretty strong direction that the preferred policy is to say ensure predictability for the impact fees for each period that they're adjusted. But that language in itself really can't be, should not be in the comp plan as a regulation. That needs to be reflected in the municipal code, where, you know, in that case, you, for consistency, when you set the policy in the comp plan, it's pretty clear about what is desired, and the zoning, the municipal code amendment should reflect that and not contradict it. I think that's where it gets down to some fine tuning of what that language really is. But right now, it sets it up in a more kind of a little more of a regulatory fashion.
Commissioner Demers?
A couple things. First off, Commissioner Jensen, I think I'm going to say this as a soon-to-be departed planning commissioner. We may have ideas what council may or may not do, but I hope that you, as future council members following me here, staying beyond my tenure, don't let that dictate your decisions ever. This body needs to be independent thinking. We need to look at the information that we need to look at, the things that we hear, and make recommendations based on our own best knowledge and beliefs. If the council doesn't agree with it, that's your absolute right. It's your choice. Paul, this whole issue of regulatory language, how long has this language been in our comprehensive plan? Give or take.
2003.
That's 10 years ago. Every 2 years, it's come up and been revisited, has it not?
No.
The capital facility?
When the capital facilities plan gets adopted every 2 years, but the comprehensive plan amendment has not been adjusted.
My comments are on the capital facility development in this instance. Each time that that gets reviewed, it gets passed on down to the State Office of Community Development for their review and comment, does it not?
Commerce Department.
Commerce Department.
Yes.
Have they ever, including approximately 2 years ago, raised an issue with the way it was structured?
Not to my knowledge.
Has there been decisions that have come down in the last couple of years that have changed the way it needs to be structured?
Commerce does not evaluate it based on legality. They don't do a review of the regulatory versus the plan and policy review.
Okay. Has it ever been challenged?
No.
If it's not broken, why fix it? I think it's really, in my mind, I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate what you're saying. But as you say, there's always going to be a compromise. There's going to be a line somewhere. And I think this is one of those instances where we step on this side of the line instead of that side of the line. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just a little more background, too. Keep in mind that, you know, they say, let's keep the politics out of this. Well, the politics were in it when it went into the comp plan. There was a council that placed this regulatory language into the comprehensive plan for a very specific reason, and that's to inhibit the changes of future councils. And that's one of the reasons why this council has decided to remove and request the removal of the regulatory language, not only in here, but throughout the comprehensive plan. We did this with the North Kelsey guidelines. We did this with the downtown guidelines. That were inappropriately placed, regulatory language was inappropriately placed in the comprehensive plan. One thing that I think has to be considered is council. They're elected. They're not a group of knuckleheads that are going to go about willy-nilly changing policy without impact and comment from the community. You know, it's been alluded that the council will change mitigation fees on an annual basis or maybe every 3 months. Well, I don't think that will ever happen, quite honestly. They're a judicious group of people that are going to take public comment. It forces it back through the Planning Commission each and every time. It goes through council. It goes through public comment. So I just wanted to clear those issues up. The regulatory language, how it's written, the reason why it's in the municipal code is it is designed to be changed. That's what code is for. It's designed to be changed based on the norms of the community. And typically those norms are expressed through the elected body of the city council. So this is an exercise to place the ability and the authority back where it belongs rather than have it artificially constrained inside of a comprehensive plan that makes it, as I think everybody would agree, very complicated to change.
I read over actually 500 pages of different state studies regarding the history and the intention of the impact fees, and my two major concerns that keep coming up again and again are the statements that our district is already so far behind and how much of the capital facilities budget the impact fees are paying for. First of all, the impact fees were supposed to mitigate impact, and they weren't put in there with the intention to catch up. And there is some regulatory language in the state information that talks about that, and I'm concerned if we are not, if we're just doing things because it's been status quo and we're not actually paying attention to what the regulations and the guidelines are supposed to be. And then the other thing is that the mitigation fees are not supposed to be 100% of the budget or even near that. They're supposed to be proportional to the impact of the new development. So my kids go to public public schools here in Monroe. I've been an active member of PTA, transit board, all kinds of things at the school district, and I appreciate the financial position. It affects my kids. But the structure of it bothers me. I don't think we're moving in a direction by using the mitigation fees to maintain a sinking ship. I just don't think that is doing what needs to be done to fix the problem. And those two specific issues I am concerned with. So I would encourage the commissioners to look into some of the state studies and learn the history of what the capital facilities were supposed to be paid for with by the state. Our state constitution says that it's the paramount responsibility of the state to make sure that kids are able to be educated, not necessarily the developers and the new development. That was something that came along later. So those two specific things I have a problem with, and it's going to take a lot of consideration to figure out what the best recommendation for me personally is going to be on that level. And I just want to say that.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Yeah, just for the record, I haven't heard anything that says or has said that mitigation fees are being used for any size impacts.
I didn't say that.
She didn't say that. Okay.
I said I've just heard tonight it's a very high percentage of 100% of the capital facilities budget. Not the intention. It's not the intention of the fee.
And while it's a high percent right now, it's because there's no other source of capital. So
but they're
funds.
Supposed to be. That's
a separate issue.
It's not, though. It's not to me.
Okay. I guess I do have a question. I'm not entirely sure why I have this question, but can it be put in the municipal code to keep the mitigation fees static for the duration of the 2 years rather than, you know, is that possible to make it in the municipal code, say you can't change it during the 2 year period when mitigation fees have already been set and budgeted for? So that city council just can't come along and say, well, we're going to change it in the middle of a cycle.
Well, I think that language could be incorporated in the municipal code, but then that could be changed.
But it takes a lot more process to change the municipal code, doesn't it?
It would be an identical process.
It would be an identical process.
It would go through the Planning Commission. What they would do is they would waive the 2 year, they would change that piece of the code at the same time they would change whatever else.
I was just trying to make it more difficult if that was possible.
We've noodled on that a fair amount.
Yeah.
The comp plan can only be changed once each year.
Right.
But the municipal code can be changed at any time.
But it still has to go through a process.
But it goes through a rezoning process. All code amendments come before the commission.
Right. And then you still have public hearings and the whole thing.
Follows the exact same process.
Right. Commissioner Demarest?
Can language such as the chairman suggests be included in the context of plan element?
I think it can be included as a policy that fees should, not will, but should, be restricted.
Well, should be, would not be a delay.
Whatever the
could be.
The right attitude, the right wording is, to establish fees for 2 year periods. Or establish fee in conjunction with the adoption of the school capital facilities plan, which is what happens now, but with some, you know, it might possibly add some sort of language about not changing that when it's adopted.
Okay.
But establishing some kind of policy, but not a regulation, that really needs to come out of the in-kind gene in the amendment, municipal code.
If I could maybe expand on that a little bit, when you think about it and look at the history of mitigation fees in this county anyway, the discount rate's never been changed anywhere. This is the first time in the county since discount rates were established that the discount rate's ever even been discussed about being changed. We're the only place that has a different discount rate. We started with 75% in the city. So, you know, this is not something that, you know, I think people, this is not a battle that I think anybody wants to take on very, very frequently. And there's plenty of public notice to ramp up to this and plenty of opportunity for, I think, all parties concerned. I think the building community, the real estate community has accepted the 50% norm. And what's to say that 2 years from now we have, or for instance, January 1st, we have a council with a completely different makeup that maybe doesn't like the 50%, assuming this council puts it in place. So again, you know, the reason for putting it in the code is to reflect the community's norms through its elected officials. I think Paul's idea of putting a should policy statement in there in the comprehensive plan is a good reminder to the process. And I guarantee that if this is ever on a future agenda, that our school board would be well represented to remind the council that this debate took place in November of 2013. And they have a 2-year capital facilities plan. So, again, I understand the desire to put that governor on the council. I just don't know if the language is realistic in the code. And if the council truly wants to change it, they're going to change it.
Okay. I personally totally agree with taking the regulatory language out of the comprehensive plan amendments. And putting it where it belongs. I just, in this particular case, I would like to have something in there, if possible, that Commissioner Newman has recommended is have something in there that pushes them in the right direction. Not regulatory, but highly suggested in that sense. Commissioner Newman.
Thank you. So, Paul, what I hear you saying, Jeff, you're echoing it, the word shall belongs nowhere in our comprehensive plan.
Generally speaking, I think that's right.
And yet it's rampant through. There's many instances, I think, of what it's doing.
How it's used.
I'm sorry?
Depends on the context.
So, shall might not be regulatory, you're saying?
Well, it depends on shall what, you know, a statement like the discount rate shall be 25%. That's regulatory language. In my mind, there are ways to state that in a non-regulatory way that puts out a pretty strong message that it be 25%. But I think they have to be careful about regulatory language.
Exploring this thought a little further, I'm not suggesting that the percentage would stay in the language at all, but based on what I just heard and discussed, suggesting that what the comprehensive plan element would have is language that says the discount shall not be changed any more frequently than the capital facilities plan that was brought forward by the school district. Now, which side of the regulatory line is that in your mind?
We're splitting hairs. It's all in how the language is crafted.
Do we need to have a legal review of that language so we don't get into that?
Yeah, possibly.
Contest?
No, I guess the thing would take some direction from the commission on what the intent is for changing this comp plan to reflect what's being discussed here. And we'll come up with some language, a couple of options, perhaps, to incorporate that in the capital facilities element.
I personally would like to see that.
Well, is this our last, Planning Commission's last touch on this tonight?
Recommendation on the next meeting on December 2nd. So this is the last public hearing / workshop.
Okay.
I'm sorry, this is the last really any in-depth discussion of it.
So I would, at the end of this, it says direction of staff to prepare findings and conclusions for recommendation to the City Council. Perhaps the Planning Commission could direct staff to inform Council of their strong desire to put a two-year or to tie the change in mitigation fees in some way to the two-year capital facilities plan cycle of the school district, and let us work on something that we can put in front of Council in the meantime to do that. That could be part of your recommendation.
Okay. I think at our next meeting, I think that's where we're going to do that, Jeff.
Okay.
Am I correct on that, Paul?
Yeah, that would be your recommendation based on findings and conclusions and any modifications or, you know, approval of capital facilities element, which includes X, Y, and Z. So changes to that.
Anything else?
I'm going to say Council is going to meet on December 3rd. I'm sorry. They're going to meet on November 26th to discuss school mitigation fees.
Yeah, for Christmas.
As an introductory session for this
next
year.
Next week.
That's a
well,
week
I
from,
think it's December.
November 26th.
November 26th.
A week from tomorrow. And then they will discuss all three of these comp plan amendments, schools, East Monroe, and the text amendments on December 3rd. Discussion.
All right.
So it is actually going to Council on the 26th for discussion, this amendment.
Commissioner Demarest?
Mr. Chairman, can we poll the Commission as far as the question of leaving it as it is with necessary tweaks? As I've suggested in my opening comment.
You want to poll tonight?
I'd like you to, if I'm a single vote in that direction, then perhaps we need to move on to the further discussion. And I'd like you to feel for where my fellow commissioners are at. Mr. Jensen, I think I got an idea where he's at.
Could you give a more comprehensive statement that we will be fully in on?
Sure. And that would be that we would largely leave it the way it is, as far as structure of the comprehensive plan element and the associated zoning code element, without any significant changes will have been over the last 10 years.
I can do that. Commissioner Jensen?
I would be of a mind to leave it as is. No changes or minimal changes.
Commissioner Tuttle?
I'm not sure.
Commissioner Rodland?
I would like to leave it the way it is, but I wish we could get something further to do with the school district on the building front. But that has nothing to do with us. I would say we could do it.
Commissioner Richard?
I think I'd like to see it move to the zoning code, but this is going to be a one. I'd rather see that if they're charged 100%, if that's what is needed, that's what needs to be done. That's what was originally, why we moved this comp in the first place.
Commissioner Shirley?
I think it needs to come out of the comp plan. The Commerce Division or whoever reviews these things shirked their duty 10 years ago by allowing it to happen in the first place. It's an anomaly and it should be removed.
Okay. I think you heard me state earlier that I I'm all for keeping regulatory out of the comprehensive plan amendment and putting it into the municipal code, so that's where I stand. So, since we have one person, one commissioner that really hasn't made a statement, where it looks like it's kind of easy.
And I appreciate that, thank you. We don't have time to keep trying to work with this. We have one more meeting in which to wrap it up and make a final recommendation to council. So I think we need to get some direction for staff out of this evening, it seems. Paul, would you make that fair statement?
Well, I think there's a fair amount of language in here that is not directly related to this specific issue in the comp plan that can be kept as part of the updated language. And some of this, I think, is extraneous information in the narrative in the comp plan. And I think it would be better to, if there were any changes to be made, to be to focus on where the language applies specifically to the discount rate and the adoption of the facilities plan, the discount rate and impact fees that come with it. I think there's other language that should be removed or revised, but I can't tell you exactly what that is without spending some time going through it. I'm not familiar enough with it tonight to make, point to certain sections.
I think that's fair too.
I'm somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I think that's fair, Paul. I think by our next meeting, I appreciate if we do have some help and direction in that sense. It's kind of short, for the time of the next. Was it the next day? Is the city council?
They will take no action on December 3rd, but they will be discussing.
They will be discussing it, right?
And of course, they'll be discussing this school mitigation phase before your next meeting.
Do you have to have that decision? You have to have that decision from us then by December 2nd.
December 2nd.
Okay.
Yes.
Commissioner Demarest?
Paul, if I were sitting in your chair, I'm not sure that I have clear direction from this commission as to which way we want to see you go. Do you?
One one extreme is to leave it as it is. The other is to, as it's proposed, the other is to leave it as it is now. Those are two very simple. And there's how much of that should be removed. Well, what's the intent of these changes, I guess, is the question. Is it to establish policy or reinforce policy regarding the changing the impact fee discount rate? Is that may have been simplistic, but is that what this is getting? Is that what the issue is? Is that a fair statement? Or are there other parts of it involved that need to be looked at? I'm trying to narrow the focus of this down to where we can perhaps make some suggest some surgical changes to the element without abandoning the proposed changes completely.
Yeah. Well, that would be my concern, since we've gone through a whole bunch of workshops to get to where we are right now, and then to have this go back and say we're going to leave it as it was. I'm not sure where that puts everything, and I can understand where you would be, in a quandary as to.
And at this point, we really are up against the wall.
Yeah. Commissioner Jensen?
I'm fairly new to all this process. I have a hard time remembering the names of this organization or that organization. Commissioner Sherwood mentioned there was some body that didn't do their job, you said, 10 years ago when this happened. What organization is that again?
It's the Commerce Commission.
Well, Department of Commerce.
Department of Commerce.
It's changed names 100 times since.
So they review comp plan amendments and municipal code amendments.
And if I can clarify that,
okay.
Commerce can take no action.
Right.
They simply review.
Right.
Any comprehensive plan change is presumed valid unless challenged.
Okay.
So
they could have challenged it 10 years ago.
As long as they are a party of record as during the process. So a comp plan can be illegal according to the Growth Management Act as long as nobody has appealed that decision within the 60-day period. There are opportunities, and the state law requires legal updates to your comp plan on a periodic basis also. That reopens the entire comp plan for that specific purpose, is to clarify those indiscretions that were placed into the comp plan by error or by a fault.
Okay.
So Commerce, in of themselves, cannot. They review, they may comment, they may send a letter back to the jurisdiction saying we don't think this is correct language, but they don't have the power to force a local jurisdiction to make a change. So,
if this was something that was left unchanged, not even changed with the 2012 numbers, then they have no one has any cause to challenge it. But as soon as even one word is changed, then someone has cause to challenge it. Is that correct?
As soon as this is adopted, there will be a 60-day appeal window, and there will be an opportunity for people to challenge this document.
Right. But if there was no changes, then there's nothing to adopt. Correct.
The fact that the vote was to make no changes to this document, you could still appeal the decision.
Okay. So even the fact that it's come up could open it up for that?
The fact that it was voted on, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments, Commissioners? Commissioner Dirksen?
The whole thing that we've been doing here is we've been trying to get all this, our codes and everything, cleaned up so that we can give them to the company to redo the whole plan, correct?
Correct.
If we don't do, what are we trying, in my mind, I keep asking, what are we trying to present ourselves as in the future? What it looks like to me, from the stuff that I've read and the stuff that we've done, is that people that were involved in it before were very passionate about what they believed, but a lot of it is out of date. And if we don't do make some changes in language and where put things where they're supposed to be, I can see that in the future for the city, the changes that we want to happen won't happen because we continue to live with the same old stuff. Now, I'm not saying that we need to change the mitigation fees. In fact, in my mind, I think the state has fallen down on their job and they need to be kicked in their butts. Because the first thing the state does is they take away, and I've watched it since we moved here, the money from school systems so they can build their bridges or whatever they feel like building. But I think we really need to consider the changes that we're making in the language to clean it up so someone that off the street, if they want to read this, can actually read it and get something out of it, and not all this stuff to blindside people is what I've seen in a lot of it. So I really think we need to clean it up. We need to get it out of where it's at and into the appropriate place. And hopefully we can put some language in there or something that it won't be able to be changed every, at a minimum, somebody. But history shows that it has not. That's not happened in the past either. So that's my main thinking.
Commissioner Lamarus?
So in an effort to try to move this along, if I accept the premise that we are going to make a change, as to how it's structured. Because I see that there's three issues in front of us. We've got a comp plan element that needs to be modified or proposed to be modified. We've got a zoning code element, municipal code element that's proposed to be modified. And we've got a question of discount. Three issues.
Also, adopting the Stonewash and Monroe School District facilities plans.
Okay.
As an aside.
Which is probably the most important thing in the whole thing, or nobody collects anything. So.
Okay. So, again, going on the premise that this change is going to occur, it seems to me, as I hear the discussion and looking at my feelings on it, the certainty is the biggest issue with regard to what happens in the comprehensive plan element. If there's some way of getting some comfort level, not for me personally, but for the school district, the recipient of these fees, that when they look at a two-year horizon, they can count on development as it occurs, paying these fees, and not something that a year from now is further discounted another 25%. Having that certainty. There's some stuff, obviously, in the language that's been proposed for the zoning, for the code element, that needs some tweaking still. Paul, you and I talked briefly about some of that language on the past mitigation fees, the replacement of property, et cetera. And that, I think, is in many ways pretty straightforward. And just it needs to, as perhaps as Diane says, make it more readable, make more sense. And then the question again of the discount, how much is the discount? I don't think we should move away from the 25% discount. I think the school district's made a really compelling case for not only needing, but being able to use all the dollars that are being generated, will be generated when we have the development occur, and use them to offset impacts that they suffer or experience as a result of growth in this community. But without schools, we're not much. And Bridget, I don't disagree with you that the funding problem needs to be addressed, but that's not something we can do here tonight. That's not something the city council can do, quite frankly. It's something that the community and the state and everyone else that's involved in needs to work on together and get figured out. We're not going to do that. So, Paul? Is that a hand move?
Yep.
Oh. It seems to me that we need to get some clarification on what we want to see come back to us for action 2 weeks from now. If we can't give staff some direction to see what they can put together and come back with in light of that direction, we're not doing our job here tonight.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Paul.
What about crafting language, potential language for the capital facilities element, the comp plan, and perhaps crafting language that could be potentially inserted in the municipal code regarding the two-year fee establishment, the predictability, the certainty? There may be a way to grasp some language for that. We can bring that back.
Okay.
Leaving the rest as with incidental changes as we have.
I'm agreeable with that.
I think there's some value in the work that's been done in the capital facilities element, and it's, there's still a little tweaking to do within the municipal code, but this, I hope, would address the issue that Commissioner Demers is concerned about, and some of the other commissioners as well.
Okay. And as far as the other elements, the other three, I think those are, we can address pretty satisfyingly at the next meeting. So,
the discount?
The discount. Yeah. We don't need to make that determination tonight.
Yeah. If they're going to talk about this next Tuesday, would that be some information that they would want to be able to talk about?
I'm sure they're going to have to. But as far as our recommendation, we don't have to make it tonight. Anything else, commissioners? favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Next public hearing is Eastman Road.
Okay, Eastman Road. We've had quite a discussion on this in the past, and this slide basically explains where we're at with this tonight. The public hearing, we did have a session with the hearing examiner on November 7th on the FEIS appeal. We are waiting on a decision from the hearing examiner on that issue. Again, like the other amendments, a commission recommendation on December 2nd with the following council review with council action on the 10th and 17th of December. Now, that once that ordinance is adopted and published, which would be, it's going to be published on December 24th in the schedule, then at that point, the Eastman Row or either of these other two amendments could be appealed to the state growth management hearings board. So what I've got just a few slides to revisit this Eastman Row. As you know, it's a land use and zoning amendment from limited open space to general commercial. This is the existing designations as limited open space. This application is to change the western 42 acres to general commercial. You've seen these slides before. We've discussed on-site impacts to do with these areas, mainly critical areas and other issues. And that's illustrated in this slide. You will recall this with these being critical areas through here, shoreline and critical areas, buffer zones and areas like here and here, and this being the buildable area after mitigation of these critical areas. Cross-section that I've included for tonight illustrates the intent for working within the NGPA areas to develop compensatory flood storage. And in the same process, basically reestablish and enhance the existing critical areas and buffer areas that are now considered marginal by the ruling of the biologists. So it's a two-pronged effort to make improvements and to also accommodate flood storage. And that's going to be done by doing some measure of cutting in this stream area or the area adjacent to stream critical areas, and filling in this buildable area, this being more in the critical area buffer in here, but filling to allow building occupancy up on that 11-acre pad in a nutshell. This is an illustration of that buildable area, a small piece up in the northeast on parcel D and the about 11 acres, 10, 11 acres on the main part of the property. Okay, off-site impacts. We've talked about this too, with mostly regards to traffic and transportation impacts, but there are others, like how's this project going to look, and what about noise, light, and so forth. The availability of utilities, public utilities that are back around the neighborhood of Main Street and Highway 2. and some thought about the cumulative impacts of this in relation to the other comp plan amendments. I think just one or two more. This would be Highway 2 here. Here's the property. And this is the future bypass with that roundabout that DOT is projecting for that point. And they're also dealing with the issue of whether there would be a roundabout required at this point or some other form of controlling the access from this property, which would actually come along a frontage road and connect through here. This is about the point where access would be allowed for this property, about a minimum distance from this roundabout to this point. And DOT is taking the position that they may it may trigger a, for all, in most instances, a roundabout at this point. But that's the extent of what DOT has come back with in terms of traffic. Brief presentation. Susan Boyd is here tonight from Pace Engineers. Should we have some questions related to the environmental impact statement? I hope I did a reasonable job of explaining all that work that
perfect.
You've done.
Well, perfect. It's all been said before.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn back to you.
Thank you, Paul. With that, I will open the public hearing for the Eastman Row Economic Development Group, CPA 2011-01, RZ 2012-01. And with that, the first thing we'll do is we'll take public testimony. And the first name I have on here is Thomas Minnick.
I'm Pastor Thomas Minnick with Heritage Baptist Fellowship. Our church owns this property. I live at 13789 194th Drive, Southeast Herman Road. You've been through a lot already tonight, so I will be uncharacteristically brief for preachers and just say that we urge you to support this change in the land use designation. I think it's a change that its time has come. Whatever inadequacies were present in the environmental impact study done by the city last year have been more than adequately addressed in this new EIS. There's been a lot of time and energy and expertise and money invested in producing that 400 pages of science that you've all seen. And so we believe any questions that have come up along the way have been adequately addressed. And we understand that the neighbors up on the bluff are never going to like this. I'm sympathetic to that. But, I would just remind commissioners that this is not public land held in a conservancy somewhere. This is a really beautiful, usable piece of property, private property, that also is not agricultural land out in rural Snohomish County. This is inside the city limits where growth and development is supposed to occur. And in fact, right on Highway 2, the busiest and most heavily traveled arterial in our city. And so this is a logical use for this property. I've listened in workshops and as people have spoken, some people have raised concerns about who's going to pay for infrastructure, utilities brought there, traffic mitigation, these things. Most of you are probably aware, if you've been doing this a while, those costs are borne by the developer. They're not borne by the city. I would, in fact, go further than that and say probably the most cost-effective thing for the city to do is to support this land use designation change, because commercial development on that site brings sales tax revenues into the city's coffers, and it becomes a net positive for the city, certainly in the way it costs to the city. And so I would just urge you to support this change, and let's finally deal with this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Commissioner Jensen? Do you have a question?
Of course, again, as I've mentioned before, I'm kind of new on this board and trying to figure all things out. But I keep hearing, like, question city staff and things about it's unusual to have this kind of a request without a project to go with it. So it strikes me as odd. Is there a reason to make this change now instead of when a project comes along to actually say, all right, this is what we really want to do here?
Actually, can I answer? Sorry.
No, you can give your name.
Yes. Susan Boyd, Pace Engineers. And I hear what you're saying, but actually, we can't submit a development proposal until a rezone happens. The city wouldn't have any capability to even take in a development proposal for anything until a rezone happens. I guess that's as simple as I can say it. Well, maybe you can expand on that, but I don't think they would accept anything at this point.
And in fact, let me just throw in, as a longtime resident of the city of Monroe, the city rezoned their own property without a specific project. And so I'm not sure why anybody would suggest this is so unusual. If you can do it for your gravel pit,
maybe
you can certainly do
maybe
it.
Maybe it was the EIS that I was hearing that about instead of the project.
I would submit to you that this EIS is the most comprehensive and compelling, complete EIS the city of Monroe has ever seen for a non-project application. And they've gone above and beyond what anybody could expect at this point in the process. The only way to get any more information, specific information, is when somebody comes along and says, yes, we want to put this retail store there. Sorry, Paul. I'm going to cut you off.
Commissioners, any other questions for Councilman? Thank you. Next name I have here is Doug Hamer.
Yeah, Doug Hamer. I live at 21122 Calvin Road. I've been at this a long time. But, you know, since the beginning of this, the proponents of this proposal have been asking us to suspend common sense and ignore really our own life experiences and accept their expert analysis of and this rosy picture of what this development is going to mean to Monroe. And I could go through volumes of examples of that, and particularly in this EIS. I mean, it may be comprehensive, but it is a whitewash job. Well, I'll cover two areas in specific areas that I know are real critical concerns to everybody. One is transportation. Now, the intersection that's going to be required at this development, a roundabout, the analysis the base engineers used to figure out the kind of loss of service that would occur there is totally flawed. They work on an assumption that makes absolutely no sense for that strip of road, for what it's being used for at that particular moment, that at the 4 to 6 p.m. rush hour, they say, and you can look in your reports if you want to, Appendix F, C31, there's a pretty good example of the roundabout where they describe the traffic coming in and out. They've got 222 cars an hour coming into this property from the west. They've got 54 cars an hour coming into the property from the east. They then have, which that makes sense, but they have 230 cars coming out of this property and going west.
and only 67 coming out of the property and going east. Now, I want to do that. Makes no sense to me. I typically will specifically avoid doing a special shopping trip during rush hour. I'm not going to run down there and come back during rush hour. But I often will combine a Stop and Shop on my way home, on my commute, because that's the most efficient way to do it, through gas, for gas and time. So the 230 people that are coming out of there are not going west. They're going east. They're continuing their commute home. And what difference does that make? It makes a huge difference. Imagine yourself driving down, going east on Highway 2, and you come to this roundabout that used to be a 55-mile-an-hour zone, you know, those are days. And now you're met with 230 cars an hour coming at you from the left. They got the right way, and they want to go east. That intersection is going to be backed up all the way into town, if not halfway to Snohomish. So really, the traffic, that's typical of what goes on in this EIS as far as, you know, making things look closer than they really would be if you took a realistic view of it. The other issue is the economy. Now, do you really believe that a new big box retail center on this property, a mile out of town, that's totally dependent on the automobile, is going to benefit the existing retail sector in Monroe? Is it going to raise their property values or depress them? Is it going to help? Anybody that comes in and shops in Monroe, even if it's at Walmart, they're parked there. There's going to be some associated sales with that. They're going to be there and they go, well, you know, as long as I'm here, I might as well go to Staples. I might as well do that. I might go, you know, maybe go to Fred Meyer's and check their prices. Maybe I'll get dinner. Maybe I'll go to a movie. This is not going to provide any of that kind of activity. People that come in here are going to skip Monroe entirely. And the Snohomish County, both the last survey, both in 2007 and again in 2012, has concluded that Monroe has an excess of buildable land for retail to carry us through 2025. This is a supply and demand economy. When you add more supply than you need, it brings everything else down. And I mean, there are countless studies, all of them, virtually all of them, about properties like this where you put retail, big box retail, just outside of a small town. It eliminates more jobs than it creates. It forfeits more tax revenue than it raises because of all of, you know, it's not going to fill those. It's not going to help fill all those empty storefronts that exist in Monroe today. And, you know, basically overall, it just drains the community of its wealth and its character. So I'm really hoping that common sense prevails here. Yeah, the other thing, just because, you know, Paul went over their little topic of their cut and fill. Now, we did examine their figures on the cut and fill, and supposedly they're going to, you know, as you probably know if you've read the EIS, they're going to cut out 46,500 cubic yards of cut out of, supposedly, out of this area around it, right in here. And then they're going to move this over here to bring this area that they want to develop up a foot to get it up to 68 feet. Well, you know, we analyzed an actual topographic map that has points all over it giving elevations. And they'll say that the LIDAR is more accurate that they use, but they use topographic maps like the one we use to check the accuracy of the LIDAR. There is not 46,000 cubic yards of cut available in here. There's 17,000 cubic yards. That's 21,000 cubic yards short. That the fill they need is not 46.
36,000 hiring dues. To bring this up a foot, now, you know, I suppose they could say, well, we're not going to bring the whole thing up a foot, we're just going to bring what we can. But their figures, that 46,500 feet, way short of what they need. That's like 68,000 feet they need. So basically, there's 50,000 cubic yards of material missing from their report. And that's just simple, you know, it goes on and on through that entire AM. I mean, I could go over more and more of those things. But anyway, like I said, I hope common sense prevails. Thanks. I don't have any questions.
Any questions for Deb? Thank you, Deb. Anybody else would like to make a comment?
I would like to just...
Okay, can you give your name and address for the record, please?
Chairman Christensen, do we need to make an emotion for the meeting to go past 9 o'clock?
Pardon?
Do we need to make a motion?
I'll take a motion for the meeting to go past 9 o'clock.
I'll make that motion.
Motion made by Commissioner Demarest.
I second it.
Second.
That includes a break.
After our next...
I'll be very quick. Very quick.
Seconded by Commissioner Shirley. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay.
Hi, Susan Boyd, Pace Engineers, Kirkland, Washington, a consultant for the property owner and applicant. I just wanted to just really briefly say that the EIS process is done in a very particular way in accordance with state law. And the engineering that's used in something like this in a draft stage is done in a particular way in accordance with standard engineering practices. In terms of the traffic report, licensed traffic engineers, I don't know if any of you have ever read a traffic report, but they're very difficult. But they're prescribed how they have to be done in accordance with WSDOT requirements and the federal highway manuals as well. And all of that was accomplished. My biggest point is that you'll see throughout both the draft and the final EIS that we are not proposing a specific development or a specific developable area. All we tried to do was point out to you that this property is developable. There is mitigation available to take care of protection and enhancement of the sensitive areas that are on site. The actual amount of developable area will be established by whatever kind of facility is constructed there. We don't even know that at this point. And the particulars of that uses needs. So who knows if they even want more than 5 acres to develop. I just don't know at this point. But the purpose was to show the worst-case scenario, and I think we've demonstrated in accordance with all the standards and by professional engineers and scientists that it can be achieved. And then it is in the best interest of the property owner and at Eastman Road. I think there's a real value to what's proposed tonight, and I hope you see the value as well. So if there aren't any questions, just encourage you to lean to the positive on this.
Commissioner, any questions for Susan? Commissioner Jensen?
I asked the question to of staff the other time we met, and it got something stirring in our mind, so I'm hoping you can help me understand it more better. As I understand, when you were talking about, you know, the worst case, and you were talking about you in this EIS about what is a floodplain or what's not and what mitigation is there, it's based off of a draft proposed change that's
in the
works. Is that correct?
That's correct. Currently, the property would be considered outside the floodplain. There are draft maps that are in the works by FEMA that show it in the floodplain. Who knows if they're going to be approved or not? Across the nation, people are up in arms about the methodology and the logic behind the draft maps. And, geez, I guess it's been 6 years since they were proposed. And so we took, that's what I mean by the worst case. We took the assumption that those maps would be adopted and put in place by the time development occurred.
So the question I have is that while I admire that approach, to me that sounds like we're not seeing the impact today. We're seeing the impact at some future point if and when that is adopted. But as of today, would it then not be accurate to say that more than 11.3 acres could be developed because it doesn't have the same maps putting as many restrictions on it?
No, that wouldn't be accurate because there might be a couple of feet difference, but basically we took the worst case scenario and we excluded everything that was critical areas, buffers, native growth protection areas. We excluded all of that and then some from
the development. But that's critical areas based on this draft map?
No, the draft map, if it was in the floodplain, if it was not in the floodplain, the developable area would be the same. Because we took where the critical areas boundaries were. I don't know, Paul, you want to put that map up again? Oops, one less. So, so we took the blue line is native growth protection area and shoreline area, and then the yellow line is wetland setbacks and native growth protection areas. So you couldn't develop anymore anyways.
And those lines are based off of current code, or are they based
current
off
code.
Of this draft?
No, current code. Nothing to do with floodplains.
Okay.
Nothing.
So what is this draft plan, what effect has that had on this? You said
how much fill would be required?
To be added or removed?
Yes. How much we would have to build the site up if it were included in the floodplain, because we would have to raise it up by a couple feet.
So if in reality, if that is not adopted, if a plan was proposed, if it was rezoned tonight and the plan proposed tomorrow, based on the current code, you wouldn't have to dig any dirt out.
Excavation.
You wouldn't have to do any raising up at all.
Well, I don't know. We probably would anyways, but yes.
Right. You wouldn't have to do any excavation.
Correct.
So, would that, I'm just wondering if that is causing a different set of figures because you geared it around something that's not adopted yet. Should be more focused on what currently is adopted.
The only thing that would change is you would just eliminate all that discussion about compensatory flood storage.
Okay.
That problem goes away.
Okay.
So that's what I mean by worst case is right. It would be sweet for the developer.
Okay, but it doesn't change the buildable land.
Nope.
You don't get more space because you don't have to dig out or do anything else.
Correct.
Okay.
I would say.
Quick statement. Commissioner Demarest reminded me that this is not about the EIS tonight.
No, I just trying to understand that for what we got to go through.
Okay.
Just something that was bugging me and I wanted the answers.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay, I would like to propose we take a short break, about 5 minutes. If we don't have any more public testimony, then we could close that first and then take a break. Okay? All right, then I'll entertain a motion to close public testimony.
I make a motion.
Motion made by Commissioner Rodman to close public testimony. Second.
I second that.
Seconded by Commissioner Demarest. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Let's take a break. 5 minutes.
Commissioner Dirksen?
You know, I think that we have gone over this and gone over this and gone over this and gone over this. I went to the EIS, I basically read that whole book, and especially took note of what people were complaining about, and I haven't seen anything that actually convinces me that we shouldn't do this, that we shouldn't rezone it, and put this, finally put this thing to rest, and, you know, in my mind, I think we're done with this, actually, and if it comes back, you know, at the end, you know, where the, what was the last thing that is happening with this right now? Is it in, I can't think of the word. Let me see. The list, please. I need the list. The appeals, are we in an appeals process right now?
We had a hearing on the appeal,
okay.
November 7th.
Okay.
And we're waiting on the hearing examiner's decision to rule in favor of the appellant for some reason, or to rule in favor of the city.
Okay.
We're expecting that decision anytime.
Okay. So in my mind, if this judicial appeal comes back in favor of it, I would say we're done with this. I would vote for this to pass.
Commissioner Demarest?
I appreciate your thoughts, Dan.
Yep,
I'd like to make a couple of comments that maybe will help, I think, clarify where we're at least in my mind. This is, again, not about the EIS tonight.
Yes.
The EIS is a separate process that this proposal had to go through. This is about the comprehensive plan amendment and whether it fits with the comprehensive plan that we have and are proposing to have on the books with the amendments tonight. And I think, as Mr. Hammer put it in his testimony, whether the character of it is right and whether it's good for the city or not, from our perspective as a planning commission. It's a much more subjective part of the process, in my opinion, and it's not cut and dry just because the EIS says it can be done.
Well, I understand. I just think what we've already gone through, and that we've already decided this once, and the only reason why we're deciding it again is because of that EIS.
When did we decide it?
Didn't we vote on this, make a recommendation for this earlier? I thought we did.
Last year, the Planning Commission did approve.
Yeah, that's what I thought. We did.
I didn't know you
either. I was sitting right out there.
That would have been April of last year, April 23rd, actually.
And for the record, the Planning Commission recommended denial at that time. It says that right on your cover sheet here, Paul. I'm sorry, 2010 recommended denial.
Oh, 2010, right.
2012, what did we do? Jeff, you remember?
Approval.
No recommendation.
Yes.
Was there a six at that time?
There may well have been.
I think there were six. I think it was it 5-1 or was it 4-2?
I thought it was a 5 or 4. I thought it was a majority.
Yeah.
We checked that for you.
It doesn't really matter. Tonight's.
Commissioner Jensen?
I just wanted to clarify what Commissioner Demarest just said a moment ago. This particular phase of tonight's festivities is specifically the rezone, correct? And then part three is public hearing and all that for the comprehensive plan amendments?
What's the difference between the two? Well, in this case, for this East Monroe Amendment, it's a combination of the comp plan land use amendment and the rezoning, or the zoning code amendment. There are actually two actions that are being considered at the same time, which is you know, fairly normal with a change like this. So tonight is the process requires at least one public hearing before the commission for any comp plan amendment, which is what tonight we had a public hearing on the EIS. But this is specific. This public hearing is specifically for these three amendments prior to taking action with a recommendation.
According to the agenda, public hearing C is all of these elements.
Right.
That's not what we're in right now.
Right, we're in B.
We're actually holding three public hearings. So the part we're in right now is A, which is the rezone piece of this two-part thing, right?
If you don't mind, let me correct it.
Okay.
There's a CPA 2011-01, which is the plan amendment, and the rezone RZ 2012-01. So it's a two-part.
Okay.
Which is the rezone and the plan.
Because we had both of these cover sheets had a public hearing, so that's what was confusing me then. Where it really is only one.
Actually, three public hearings within the same night.
Right.
I did neglect to put we do have the comp plan and the rezone on
right. This was A.
Correct.
So C has all these attachments for all of this stuff.
And we'll have a public hearing on those.
Right. So I thought this was the comp plan amendments, and that this little piece was the diesel. Am I mistaken there?
Yeah. Each one is separate.
There's three public hearings.
Right. But that's what I said. I thought the public hearing that we're in right now was this rezone piece, not the comp plan piece.
Well, it is. It's the comp plan. CPA comp plan amendment 2011-01.
Plus the rezone.
And the rezone 2012.
Okay.
This being the
comp. Mr. Chairman?
Okay.
Yes, Steve, we can't have the rezone without the comp plan amendment.
Right. Okay. I didn't know.
Okay. I understand your confusion. The comp plan text amendments are a whole different item and process.
Okay.
Independent of East Monroe and the schools.
Okay.
They do have to all be considered together, you know, when they're being judged for recommendation. But they are completely separate.
All right. Okay. Could you bring up that chart or the list of the things we're supposed to consider as a planning commission when we make these kinds of things?
I think it might be in here.
Okay. And if you want to... I don't have anything else until you get that far. If you want to make someone else's comment.
Yeah, any other commissioner comments? Discussion? I have one comment to make, and I'm not really sure, Paul, how we would provide recommendations to you tonight without, you know, giving you our recommendation. I'm not sure if it came out right. if we're having a meeting on the 2nd,
right,
to provide recommendations, I mean, we could give you a recommendation tonight, I suppose, but do you want us to wait until the 2nd?
December 2nd shorter.
Huh?
And make it for a short meeting in December 2nd. Your recommendation needs to be based on findings and conclusions, which were not completed for this
meeting
tonight.
Okay, so that was my confusion, or my concern,
right,
I don't want to get into the part where, you know, we give recommendations at this point because we don't have findings and conclusions.
Right.
Thank you, Chris.
He's looking for direction.
Yes, right.
Direction, not.
And that's what I'm asking the commission right now for is do they have recommendations or directions for staff? at this point. Mr. Demarest?
Mr. Chairman, I have some comments rather than direction or suggestions for direction at this point.
Okay.
In this part of the process, over the years, we've always been told that in part we look at our comprehensive plan and its various elements to help us form a decision individually and ultimately as a commission. It's those elements of the comprehensive plan that largely will be the basis for that recommendation of either support or denial made going forward. As I reviewed the comprehensive plan elements, I see two places that really could be argued as supporting this proposal. And specifically on the bottom of LU-12, and I'm in attachment 2, which is the clean text recent changes highlighted of the land use element. Again, LU-12, the very last paragraph at the bottom of the page, where it says, while impacted by environmental access issues, well, it's fronted along the US-2, the property has potential for commercial development. There's an acknowledgement there within the element that commercial may be the right way to go with this. On number 36, in the same document, I go to the second paragraph under the commercial industrial land demand that talks about the limited supply of vacant developable land along the US-2 corridor. Again, it could be taken as being supportive of this recommendation, this proposal is before us tonight. But then continuing on, if I go to LU-42, and specifically goal 1, to pursue well-managed orderly expansion of the city. And in my mind, and I believe I've heard this in public testimony along the way, this is not a well-managed expansion, and that it's isolated. It stands by itself. It's not connected to the city except by its being located on a state highway. And so I question how well it satisfies that particular goal. Looking further, LU 42 and 43, looking at LUP 1.1, the bottom of the page, talks about limited open space and what land should be classified and designated as limited open space. And when I look at that policy, and in particular 1B, it talks about severely impacted by critical areas, including frequently flooded areas, steep slopes, or wetlands, development requires significant mitigation. I've been told time and time again that any development on this property will require significant mitigation. Continuing on, LU-51, and looking at policy 9.1, locate new commercial development near major traffic corridors, well, it is that, parking areas, it could have that, and enhance pedestrian circulation. It won't have any of that. Again, going to the isolation that this property will have. And also looking at policy, policy 10.1, require all commercial developments located and designed to minimize adverse impacts on traffic volumes, noise, stormwater runoff, drainage patterns, and other related issues on surrounding land uses. If I just do a simple score here, it seems like the weighting is against the applicant's proposal. Now, granted, it's not that simple, clearly, but I'm not convinced, based on our comprehensive plan and questions of character, what's best for the city, those sorts of, call them touchy-feely if you want, or subjective questions, that a recommendation support this is the best way to go. Thank you.
Commissioner Sherwood?
Yeah, I think maybe on LU-42, you might be a little misplaced because this does not represent an expansion of the city. In regards to the others, the environmental impact statement has made it clear that it meets those criteria, and as anything, the impacts can be managed. So I am in favor of both the comprehensive plan amendment and the rezone.
So when you say it's outside the city, I think that's kind of what you were saying. It's separated outside the city.
I see.
It's still within city limits.
It is.
True. And that expansion was done for a reason, I'm sure. You don't expand your city limits to just to leave it unavailable, you know. So I too agree that it is a crime. It's on Highway 2. And I think it follows what the city needs. So I'm leaning towards that direction also. Leave it in the plan. Commissioner Rodman?
Yes, I've been studying this quite a bit. I have a comment to make on it too, that it seems like about 40 some years ago I was in the same situation three blocks down the street, where I was being told I could not do what I was going to do, and I had a heck of a fight doing it, and it sounds like this gentleman was having the same problem up there. But I won, and I think everything, as much as I have friends up on top of the hill, I still think I would go along with this.
Commissioner Cobb?
And I too, even from a council side, I went to meetings and met with neighbors, and I've heard a lot of the arguments. To me, the arguments keep coming back to things that don't feel like a concern part of the rezone, and that it's always been about transportation, feasibility, and the cost of development. And I'm not convinced that those are issues that won't be worked out. The transportation will have to be figured out with the, with, you know, what's allowable, and the feasibility and the cost are not my issue, and they're not my thing to worry about. So as far as the comprehensive plan goes, I don't see that it's not meeting the requirements or the recommendations there for doing that, and I would also be in favor of going ahead with the rezone too.
Commissioner Jensen?
There was, in the same land use comprehensive plan, LU-12, same section, in the next to last paragraph, is talking about WSDOT has a future roundabout plan, and that we are suggesting that that western roundabout, western to this rezone area, may provide an opportunity for an eastern gateway to the city, and specifically the word gateway. And I don't know where it is, but I know that somewhere in this development plan or proposal was the notion that perhaps this rezoned area developed, or its possible roundabout on US 2, might be a gateway. Well, if it seems to me that our comp plan is suggesting the gateway would be served and represented by WSDOT's roundabout, not by some other development now before you reach what would be our perceived gateway into our city, and instead becoming something that just doesn't fit. It doesn't, because it's happening, it's before that gateway, and it doesn't seem like it would have a place to be trying to replace that gateway with its own representation of what those developers might feel would be a gateway. So that's just, I'm currently not think, you know, I don't think I could support this change, because I just don't think another roundabout, and if that's a potential side effect of this, I don't think that's something that will benefit the city, and so it's not something I can support.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Number one, we haven't done any gateway
gateway. It means nothing more than an entry through a space, period. There's multiple gateways through the community. Any place you see the word gateway in there has, I don't think we've defined it as an entry into the city. So that's number one. Number two, nothing in any part of this comprehensive plan says there will be roundabouts on Highway 2. That will be done at the development stage. WashDOT has indicated in their letters that there will be roundabouts. But the land use change is a completely separate item than from a roundabout that's alluded to in a policy in the comp plan. So I would just encourage you to look at what's going on here and try to set your feelings about a roundabout as a transportation solution on a state highway aside from your decision tonight. But that's, I would just like to leave that out there.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments, commissioners? Paul, do you have some feeling of direction based on comments?
Yeah, I think so.
Today? Commissioners, anything else? Please go ahead and close this. Commissioner Jensen, any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Okay. The last public hearing we have, I can find my sheet here, the whole my stack of paper. The Comprehensive Plan Amendment, CPA 2013-8, text amendments.
I don't believe we have anyone signed up on the sign-in sheet.
No, I think it's a kid. It's already here.
But you do need to open the hearing for
public. Okay, that's fine.
Right. You need to open it and ask for comments.
Okay,
so open the window and yell out.
So we'll bypass the introduction here, Paul.
That'd be fine.
Okay. All right, and then so I'll open the public hearing for comments. We have nobody signed in.
You?
So I'll entertain a motion to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing. Moved by Commissioner Dirksen to close the testimony portion of the public hearing. Seconded by Commissioner Tuttle.
Feel safe.
Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Discussion by commissioners.
Which one are we starting with?
attachment one, land use zone.
Mr. Chair, a couple quick comments.
Yes, sir.
On the land use section,
yes.
There are some things that to put to rest yet. One is that there's a, this has come up in the past and it still hasn't been solved. There's some conflicts between the capacity tables on page 29 and 30-31. There's some disconnect between the data from the buildable land report and the projections and what we have projected for a deficiency or number of units that were short. They don't agree. They don't support each other. But what I'm going to need to do is to get with county staff and work out the issues that's been brought before, and we have not sold. That's one item. Another is we did some minor updates in a few places on some language, like 522, for example, that we talked about last time. And we did update the commercial and industrial acreage supply of vacant ground in the text. We tweaked a few numbers and also added a couple of maps for vacancy of industrial and commercial. And we have not changed the to any great extent the natural environment section that was incorporated. Commissioner Sherwood prepared some text on. I would like to get back to that and finish revisions to that before your last meeting. I think there's still some work to be done with that, that I'd like to get done if at all possible. And take advantage of Commissioner Sherwood's, some of his good work on that.
Commissioner Robin?
Yes, I was looking at the map on this particular one. I don't have it on me right now, but I noticed there was no zoning that I could see on there for the old Simon Mill. Is that zoned?
Well, that rural density?
No. I didn't see it on the map when I had it out. And I was going to question that.
Which property?
Simon Mill, the old sawmill.
East end of Fremont?
Yeah. Down by the
old world neighborhood.
It's in the, well, that would be in the,
Moreland neighborhood.
Yeah, I think it's the Allen Moreland neighborhood. Potentially commercial. We'll check on that piece and see if it needs to be added to this inventory as commercial or potentially commercial ground.
Thank you. To clarify an issue that was brought up by Mr. Jensen earlier, on LU 12 of the red line, that talk about a roundabout. The comp plan is only talking about one potential roundup.
Right.
Roundabout. Let's not call it the Western roundabout.
Oh,
if you're only talking about one roundabout, it can't be the Western roundabout. That just lends to confusion. So I would suggest we take that one word out of there in that section. Because again,
it's saying this roundabout.
The roundabout may provide an opportunity. There's only one roundabout being talked about here. Let's not try to clarify this something that's not at this point.
You're right. At one time we had, I think, both roundabouts in here.
Yeah, we did.
About the eastern
one.
We
did, we took the other one out.
Okay.
And I think that Commissioner Jensen was saying he saw it someplace else.
That might have been.
It was.
It probably wasn't here.
He asked it to be.
It used to be in there.
Yeah.
As a gateway.
As a gateway.
Gateway.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was.
Because there would have been.
I don't know.
There would have been more project.
It might have been something on one of their slides, too, yeah. Possibly, when they were first presenting things. But.
That is a good suggestion.
Okay.
Commissioner Sherwood.
Yeah, we've been beating this thing. It's down on the ground. We need to be here that day. The primary concern I ascertained from our prior meeting was that because we're going to have to live with this for a year or so, we just want to make sure that it's fairly reflective. And so I really hope we can avoid tonight going through the other edit. I've gone through it and, you know, found a few things that are not significantly germane to the task at hand, which is to hand something over to the consultant that will be functional. And I believe we have that in front of us. If someone has a specific concern about something they feel that will be a problem in the interim, while these versions stand, I'm good to go on this stuff.
Commissioner Gamer?
Yeah.
And I don't have a bunch of evidence either. I would not suggest we go there, but this will be a controlling document for the next 2 years or so until that consultant gets done with the 2015 update, which will probably will that be in December 2015, Paul?
No, it has to be adopted by the end of June 2015.
Okay, so it will
most likely be May or early June.
So this will still be
almost 2 years.
Living document for 18 months. It needs to be largely correct. Paul, with the exception of the tables and discrepancy that clearly does exist there that you and I talked about earlier today, I don't have any issues with the rest of the document.
My comment is I agree with Commissioner Demarest. I don't have any details. In here that was substantial, so I don't know.
I agree.
Commissioner Jensen?
I would just take out the reference on the five on bottom of LU4, bottom of LU5. It implies that there's no interchange in at Paradise, or at Echo Lake, right? There already is an interchange at Echo Lake, so there's only one planned interchange left to go. It's not big, but it's...
There's 1.5 you want to get specific, because Echo Lake needs another bridge.
Well, it needs to be widened, but it is an interchange. There's no traffic light.
It's
a second bridge.
Yeah. which would change the interchange.
Well, he's saying it would be a planned interchange. I don't count that as an interchange. That was that phase was done. The widening has its own piece to that. There's no traffic right there.
Yeah, okay.
It's out of the city anyway.
Okay. Let's move on then to the housing element.
I guess a couple of quick things to point out. One is how we cleaned up some language on page 5, the highlighted paragraph, and added a policy back on the very last page about, we had some talk about connections between neighborhoods. I think part of it had to do with circulation and dead-end streets. We added this in terms of pedestrian access. There are other, came up with other existing policies that did address roadway connections and dead-end streets, trying to not build dead-end streets, and some of the connectivity that's in the policies that in large part has not been realized in some of these subdivisions, but that has been taken care of other places. And there's also a question brought up about protecting against natural hazards. And I thought the place to add that might be more appropriate if it's not already in there in the land use element, because we shouldn't be protecting just housing, but really all development from natural hazards. I want to go back and confirm that it's in here or add some language to reinforce that.
You're talking about like on the last page of
I added a policy on the last page of housing.
Oh, okay.
And there's another policy that we maybe should have related to natural hazards, which I think is more appropriate in the land use element if it needs to be added, unless it's already there.
Okay, I get it.
I don't think it's in there specifically, but we'll add something about natural hazards. Talking about two different elements at the same time.
Was that around natural hazards to protect against being like walked in dead end?
No, more so in terms of say flood, steep slopes, subsidence, erosion, all that sort of thing.
We have earthquakes in Washington?
No.
Exploding volcanoes.
Something about subduction, so that's all I know. Okay, Paul, can we go on to the housing element then? Is that okay?
I just covered that.
Paul. That was
there. Yep. That was
we just, okay, we covered it. All right.
Unless you have some other comments or questions on housing. A couple minor changes.
Paul, would you figure out the right answer for the numbers on the land use element with regard to supply and need? Make sure that we bring HO12 land availability into conformance with that.
Right. Right now it reflects that both of those tables with the inherent conflicting information.
Yes.
Anything else, commissioners? Any other?
Did you say that you found something already here that was about addressing the dead end area issue?
Yeah, there was policy in land use. In the land use element that talked about connectivity and no long dead ends. That's already in there in the comp plan. It's not reflected in our code, but zoning code, but it's in the comp plan.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not hearing anything on I must be older than that boss. I can use that as an excuse for now. Okay. Then economic development. Attachment 7.
Is there not a highlighted version?
Because it's a clean text version. I can't read the other version. Yeah. I went through this pretty well, and I think what we discussed the last time, yeah, a lot of those things were incorporated into this.
Yeah, I got rid of the booms and that.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that. I think it read a lot easier for me.
It did.
I agree with that. I didn't see anything jump out at me in this person. Commissioner?
I had a couple of items. Okay. I think the Great Recession is technically over, Jeff. I don't know what that word is. The very first page under Snohomish County, when it talks about from 2007 to 2013, that the Great Recession, that the county is still living through.
Country.
And I think that every economist out there agrees that by definition it's been over for a year or more. Speaking of Boeing, Wayne, thank you. ED2, Jeff. I'm looking at attachment 6, the red line version.
Yeah, that's right.
The third paragraph down there, where it talks about Boeing, strong employment and income growth in the air for many through 2013, and it will continue on this pace for years to come. Do we want to make that strong a statement that it's going to continue on that pace, or likely continue? I just think we should soften it a little bit.
I haven't heard anything about production decreases at Boeing, and I haven't heard anything about reduction in staff at the Navy Yard. So, I mean,
okay. It was just.
Did you hear about that? The union vote?
That's an increase. Is what that is. I mean, they're not gonna stop the existing 777 line until so.
Right,
well, I don't know. We can say likely. It's easy.
Other commissioners, any thoughts on that? I mean, it's a pretty strong statement the way it's written.
Mm-hmm. Well, likely. Put likely in there.
My only comment on that would be is there could be movement by Boeing to move more manufacturing to the East Coast. So that could put a crimp in that, you know, that number there.
I used to live in St. Charleston. I know they would be happy to have it, but I don't think they're on the list for the new plant. There's Utah.
Everybody's on the list.
Well, they just broke ground on the new facility, so that's what's part of
three other places.
So I was going to end your recession in 2011, I think, and then continue by end the country is still living through slow economic growth.
Yes, it recovers. Absolutely.
And then, yeah, likely, we can do well and continue on that.
I think that would make a lot more sense. On ED5, the last bullet point at the bottom, you clarified that the expansion, clarified elsewhere, that the expansion from the bridge down to Paradise Lake Road is not funded. But you didn't talk about the fact that the Paradise Lake Road interchange is not funded. And when combined with the planned Paradise Lake interchange, which is unfunded. So we really don't have any time frame on that. And Jeff, you've got the reducing commute time by half when operational, when that's all said and done. Mm-hmm. Where are you getting that from?
That's kind of directly from developers that I speak with that are moving into town, that are looking to move to Monroe.
They think the commute time is going to get moved, cut in half.
Cut in half.
Between here and the...
Yep. It's not based on anything other than that.
Well, I tried to get on the 405 and 522 the other day. Anytime was doubled.
Well, 405 is a different deal.
So I'll carpool.
That's how you get to the east side.
We are part of the east side. We're becoming part of the east side rapidly. So.
Well, I guess I would just be cautious about making that claim to somebody just by half. Less state DOT is saying that. I doubt that they are. I think my last comment.
Did we say something like significantly reduced?
So forgive me for trying to be optimistic and promoting. I'll just cut the whole paragraph where it's easy to do. So. What we're trying to do is show economic development.
Yeah. But we don't want to overpromise and then find ourselves in a position of having under-delivered at the same time.
I agree.
I think this paragraph has value. It needs to stay.
Yeah, I think you can use the word could or will significantly reduce something that's just a little bit less.
You could just say could, cut it, and inclusive.
And did you get... Are you going to add the part about the widening of the river to Paradise Lake? Because that's really what's needed to reduce the community.
Everybody I've talked to with regard to 522 is Paradise Lake interchange will not be funded unless the full build-out of all the lanes is complete between here and Monroe. That's part of that whole package.
But there were five phases.
And
Paradise Lake is phase two, and the
rest of it's going to be funded
three.
In the next transportation package. Is what that's the last thing. Dan Christensen was the one that told me that very thing. So
I just think they WASHA had always treated them as two separate things, even if they happened together.
And I have, and quite honestly, it's Paradise Lake interchange that or stoplight that slows the traffic down at Echo Falls and Fales Road when you talk to the transportation engineers. It's not the two lanes. It's the fact that there's a stoplight on 522. And once Paradise Lake stoplight goes away, the two-lane road is no longer the issue. It's because there'll be...
That's coming this way.
Both ways.
So the problem going the other way is when it's going to be when it crosses...
Well, then you're going to be stopped at 405, where Dave can't merge into Kirkland, so... Because it'll be four lanes all the way through. Okay, I'll fix this paragraph for you guys. So it's slightly less aspirational.
And my last comment.
Just less. Was
ED14, the job housing balance. I know you just didn't get to it after our discussion last time. It doesn't make sense saying that our job ratio is going down. And the last paragraph says, what does this mean about Monroe's economic future? It means that the city will continue to see strong growth in its residential population. It's backwards. People follow jobs.
And when you look at the big disclaimer about inventory and analysis, that continues on through that. And maybe I need to be clear that that continues all the way to the goals. Right. We didn't go through this and fix... and create consistency with the housing element or the economic or the so.
I'm not saying there's a problem with the first paragraph there. I think that's fine. I think the conclusion in the second paragraph is what's backwards.
What does this mean for Monroe's future?
It says, people follow jobs, and our jobs have continued to decline because of our increase in population base. So, it's just backwards. Anyone else seen that? Jeffrey, you seen it?
Talked about that.
Yeah.
It does seem contradictory.
So you're saying that there's not jobs in Monroe?
No, I'm not saying that at all, but Monroe has approximately 0.65 jobs per household. Significant drop, and the reason for the significant change is due to the residential growth Monroe has experienced in the past 10 years. It all makes sense. But then we go on to ask the question, what's it mean for our future? And we're saying it means that the city will continue to see strong growth in its residential population. So our imbalance will continue to get
more imbalanced. And then we say people fall in jobs. Well, the jobs are declining relative to our population counts. So our population counts can't keep increasing because people are following jobs.
It is confusing paragraph, Joe.
I'll reread it.
I think we're increasing jobs.
We're increasing residential faster than employment.
Which is decreasing the ratio of jobs to population.
Throwing off the balance.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the ideal balance is.
Well, here's that, I think, one.
We might just have to just strike some of this language because, quite honestly, fixing flawed numbers to create clarity and logic is illogical to me. So I didn't even... We skipped over this section.
And take it out.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it is confusing for sure.
Yep. Thank you.
Very good.
Anything else, commissioners? Jeff?
And you'll see that Paul added more streamlined bulleting formatting under the goals and the policies. So,
I for one did not really go through a lot in depth on this document.
And quite honestly, there's nothing that could be edited in those documents. Those are exactly what they are.
I assume that. That's why I didn't
right.
spend a whole lot of time on it. So. I have any comment on attachment A. But as far as the text amendment,
I got what I need.
Yeah, we need.
Yep.
Okay. I'd be willing to entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
I'll make that motion. Second.
Moved by Commissioner Demarest to close the public hearing, seconded by Commissioner Hodler. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The next item on the agenda, I'm going to say, is
more discussion.
No more discussion. I asked if we can go ahead and entertain a motion to adjourn. Paul, unless you got something, or Jeff, you got something?
Actually, yes. So if you don't meet until December 2nd, and actually that will be the last meeting of this commission for 2013. There won't be another meeting in December.
Okay.
But just FYI, regarding the comp plan 2015 update, the consultant scheduled the visioning workshop for Thursday, December 5th. We'll get a little more information about this. It's a Thursday night, going to be held at Park Place. I point in the right direction, down the street. That's really the kickoff of the whole process for that update. So that's a date to kind of keep in mind. Thursday, December 5th. Visioning exercise with the consultant of the big public meeting.
And it's going to be announced where?
Word will be out via the web and paper, and we'll keep you all informed as commissioners as well.
Okay. And I will make that up.
That'll be Commissioner Delris' last meeting.
Yes, it will.
Yes, it will.
Because I might want to bring a little time to come earlier that night.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that.
So, 5 to 7?
For you, we can go 10 to 7.
Okay, 10 to 7.
If
we put together your greatest list of rhetorical questions, though, we may have started by top 100. I think we can get to 100.
All right.
That would be nice.
Well, thank you. That'll be a change. We have a motion on the floor to adjourn.
I'll second.
Seconded by Commissioner Jensen. The motion was made by Commissioner Romney and seconded by Commissioner Jensen. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. I'll bring you a question.
Thank you all,
Commissioner.
I think every Brit should be in the same.